This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. J.C. Kane is producing today, and signature support for Talk Louisiana comes from Brian Lowe Financial. Thanks to Stephanie Regal, who hosted yesterday and did her usual fine job. And tomorrow we are slated to hear from the mayor of East Baton Rouge Parish, Sharon Weston Broom, and come Thursday, Sister Helen Prejean is slated to be with us. We had originally had her scheduled today, but Sister Helen, who's been making the rounds, you may have heard her on Fresh Air yesterday, will be with us Thursday. Camille Manning Broom, another Broom, is in the house. And thank you for joining us, Camille.
Thank you for having me.
And Camille is the CEO of the Center for Planning Excellence, and she has a degree in from the LSU School of the Coast and Environment. And Camille, of course, is now involved in that big topic. CPEX for years has worked in many aspects of life in Louisiana and in our community. And I remember back in the day, we would talk about smart growth, big, big topic, but there's none bigger in Louisiana than coastal erosion and the future of the state. And you're addressing that full-fledged. What's going on?
Well, is it working?
Yeah, get to the microphone.
I'm excited to be here, and especially to talk with you about the larger consequences of climate change. The more we start talking about it, the more we can focus on the solutions and how to fix it. And so we've been, you know, for the past decade working with our coastal communities in particular and our state agencies on how to reduce risk. You know, we've got 41% of the contiguous United States that drains through Louisiana, and we're all feeling the impacts of water or drought in some way or another across the state. But the implications for increased temperature due to climate change will have really negative effects on us, and what we're going to, the expectations and the predictions for the next 10 years are going to be pretty daunting for the sea level rise predictions, but also the heavy downpours where we're seeing, you know, 4 inches in an hour, 8 inches in an hour. Our infrastructure was not designed to withstand that, and so we've got to start building 21st century infrastructure to manage our new conditions.
877-217-5757 is your number. And if you'd like to send us an email, talk@talklouisiana.org. Camille Manning Broom, in her capacity as the CEO of CPEX, notes that nearly every aspect of life in Louisiana, from public health to the economy to the housing sector and others, are affected by, quote, climate change. And, of course, it's affected our coast dramatically. We lose a football field every hour and a half, and it's been happening for years, and the boot is going away. We have lost what amounts to a land loss the size of the state of Delaware over the last generation. Now, Garrett Graves, who used to be the climate guru for Louisiana, he was at the press club last week, and he said this is a global issue and that it cannot be singularly addressed by the United States, that it has to be a global effort for this to work. And what can be done if China isn't on board, for example, the world's largest country? How can we in Little Louisiana make a difference?
Mm-hmm. Well, the fact is the world is on board. The majority of countries have signed on to the Paris Agreement to reduce greenhouse gases. In most countries, and many countries that I visit and work in, especially across Europe and even in Africa, they're already making drastic changes to mitigate greenhouse gases, doing it through the change of deforestation plans, the change in transportation systems, getting rid of coal and a number of other big contributors. In the United States, we are one of the only countries that's still not on board with accepting the science, which is mind-boggling to me. There was a climate opinion poll done by Yale that was just released in a series of maps, and the good news is that 61% of East Baton Rouge Parish residents accept the science of climate change and understand that it could impact them. However, some of our neighboring parishes, it's, you know, in the 40s and 30%. And so I think the first thing we've got to move forward with as a community and as a public is let's stop, you know, questioning the science. 97% of scientists agree that climate change is happening, and it's happening due to human impact.
The leader of the free world does not agree. The president has said that climate change is a hoax started by the Chinese. He's not a scientist, but he's a leader of the free world, and he has a lot of people backing him, including our congressional delegation and including all the Republicans. And right now, the Republicans control the U.S. Senate. That's why this is something that is very difficult to address on a statewide basis without federal help. What can be done? The president also pulled out of the Paris Accord that you just talked about. What could be done in Louisiana when all these other aspects of life at much higher levels, higher pay grades, are not going the way you would like them to?
Well, we're going to feel the impacts regardless of what politicians' platforms are. We are already feeling the impacts where, you know, in 2016 we had flooding in areas that had never been flooded before. Majority of which didn't have flood insurance. A lot of market shifts are happening.
Okay, well, we know that, but what can be done?
One, we need to start managing our water on site. Our solutions have typically been let's get rid of the water the fastest and point to some control structure. We need to manage water on site, which we could do a lot through green infrastructure. When you look at cities like Copenhagen, and they've had a number of cloudbursts similar to what we're having, heavy downpours in a short amount of time, they're creating sponge cities, sponge effects, and that's mostly through green infrastructure, managing water on site, detaining, retaining, then draining. These are simple solutions that could be incorporated into all of our infrastructure. St. Petersburg, Florida, just passed a law that any capital improvement project over $1 million, $1 million, has to include managing water on site, green infrastructure. So policies are being put in place. New investing tools like green bonds and resilience bonds are coming on the market. The insurers are getting involved. Banks are getting involved. It's just a matter of time before we start seeing more of it here. It would be nice to get ahead of it, though. Since we are on the front lines, we're feeling the impacts much more so than many other places.
And CPEX had a state agency resilience building workshop
last year.
Developed in response to a finding in the 2017 Rising Above Symposium that stronger coordination is needed between the state and local jurisdictions, as well as between state agencies themselves, in order to advance a comprehensive approach to the coastal crisis. Are all the state agencies on the same page?
That's an interesting question. That would be too hard for me to respond to. I would say that all of our state agencies are feeling the pains similar to what our local communities are feeling, with not enough resources and continually in some type of recovery mode. We're always recovering from something, whether it be neighborhood floods, hurricane impacts. You know, our coastal communities are continually flooding, or big economic events. And so we've got state agencies who desire and want to provide the best services to our local governments and our constituents, and we're trying to help them move through that in thinking about the impacts to come and how to build collaboration around all of us addressing our climate conditions and our coastal crisis.
We're visiting with Camille Manning Broom, and we'll stay with her a little while longer. Your number is 877-217-5757. Talk Louisiana, or talk at talklouisiana.org is our email. And Camille is leading the charge from the CPEC's vantage point to do what we can as a state to thwart coastal issues, climate change, if you will. And, of course, we have disagreement among politicians primarily. She is correct that more than 90% of scientists agree that climate change is with us and that it is impacted by what we do as humans, but politicians have a much different point of view. And, for example, a listener notes that coal, which Camille noted, is still, of course, going strong. And the president is a big advocate of coal, and he carried West Virginia by a pretty good margin in the 2016 election, a state that went to Dukakis in 1988. We're back in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for listening to Talk Louisiana. If you'd like to participate as a caller, 877-217-5757. Camille Manning Broom is with us, the CEO of CPEX, the Center for Planning Excellence, an organization that's been around for a while, and she has held her post for the last year, but has been involved in various and sundry important matters for some time in our community, and as mentioned, is a master's graduate from the LSU School of the Coast and Environment, and we were talking about climate change, and a listener asked if there is some kind of report, the ones I cited, that is available for those who'd like to go online. Is that available?
Yes, www.cpex.org, and you can download all of our reports.
Okay, and you just went to Portugal a few months ago. This was a world climate gathering, and I mentioned this is definitely a worldwide endeavor. What do they think about the United States pulling out of the Paris Accord?
Although the U.S. and this administration has not backed the Paris Accord, we have had amazing response from our cities and our governors from across the U.S. coming up with their own greenhouse gas abatement plans and, you know, really leading the discussion. And so although from a I think there's an understanding of politics of what's happening, but we've got some great leaders in our cities and states across the U.S.
Grace at LSU. Grace, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Camille Manning Broom.
Hi, good morning. I really appreciate the work that Camille does, your guest. I think that does a lot to improve our quality of life here in Louisiana. And that's just one more thing I wanted to point out, is that even if we can't get some of our politicians on board here, if they're unable to get on board with the understanding the science of climate change, a lot of this work will actually improve our quality of life, whether it's reducing flooding. Another suggestion I would add is if we could get a high-speed train from Baton Rouge to New Orleans, that would do a lot to mitigate carbon emissions, and it would improve our quality of life.
All right. Thank you, Grace.
Thank you, Grace. I couldn't agree more.
Bobby Jindal was against that high-speed train. In fact, he had some federal money to do it and opted not to. Was
Highly
that a mistake?
Highly
unfortunate. He's a bright guy. Rhodes Scholar last time I checked.
Well, it would have benefited the citizens of Louisiana greatly.
You would have thought. But yeah. I remember talking to former Governor Romer, and he was in accord with Jindal, said it was just be a waste of taxpayer money. But some of us have a different opinion. Maggie in Mid-City. Maggie, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. Camille, I also want to say thank you. I really appreciate your work, and I really appreciate your frankness and with climate change and just even naming it. I went to the summit last year, and it was really refreshing. I have a two-part question. One, you referred to the need to update infrastructure to accommodate these new sort of rain events. And could you speak to what sort of infrastructure beyond drainage, because I think that gets a lot of attention, but what could we look at beyond drainage? And then secondly, in terms of you said, like, managing water on site, and if you could speak to, I think it was around Barrie, we saw the two parishes actually litigation appear about the aqueduct that was put up and just the need for watershed management and how that needs to be a collaborative effort.
Yeah, no, thank you so much, Maggie. Well, on one hand, we've got to look at our drainage systems within the larger watershed and understand how we as neighbors to one another are impacting each other. And so I applaud the governor's efforts and this regional watershed initiative that they're going to be rolling out. And so, one, there's the regional piece that's critically important. As we know, water does not care about political boundaries. The second is we've had a very conventional drainage approach where that is, you know, it's clearing ditches, expanding drainage canals, half a dozen other methods that work by speeding water downstream as quickly as possible. But this approach only works until the system is overwhelmed. And then there's a choke point. So we need to focus on green infrastructure, managing water on site, slowing it down, and then understanding how quickly the runoff is entering into the existing drainage system. There's a number of approaches and methods to do this. It's happening all over the globe. They're doing it well. There are places that are managing enormous amounts of these cloudbursts on site. So we just need to start implementing, getting behind these solutions and implementing them. And it's going to cost us.
Your number is 877-217-5757. And a listener writes, thank you for your comments and frankness about climate change. When you say we need to develop and update our infrastructure to accommodate those new rain events, what beyond drainage are you referring to?
So think about a road project. When we're doing a road project, we could be also enhancing the storage capacity of water on that road project. So we have to think about multiple benefits of our infrastructure instead of singular infrastructure improvements. This is, you know, going to enhance quality of life aspects as well. By incorporating green infrastructure, but it has to be a multifaceted approach. It can't just be putting water in a pipe and pushing it down somewhere else for someone else to deal with.
Now, Boo Thomas, your friend and former
dear
honcho
friend.
There, she says you presented at the CODE conference, which was a premier conference put on by Vox Media, where tech and media leaders convene to talk about how tech is shaping the future. And we know that the future is already here in many ways, but how much of a advancement can there be beyond what we already have?
It was a fascinating conference. I was definitely out of my realm. You know, I'm not used to being in the tech world, and so it was fascinating to hear about discourse on, you know, YouTube and how to manage how many, you know, the content being uploaded on by, you know, 2 million YouTube videos a day and so forth. But I was really there to talk about influencing the tech industry on having a stronger commitment on climate change. And my session was called Survival of the Fittest, which is a pretty daunting title. I didn't come up with that, obviously. But they originally invited me there to answer the question: Do all the wealthy people need to have bunkers in New Zealand? And the answer is no. I was there to provide guidance on how they need to incorporate values within their industries and influence our political discourse around addressing climate change.
All right. 877-217-5757 is your number. Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Hi, Phil. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Hey, Jim. I know there's a quote by Sinclair Lewis that says, it's difficult to get a man to understand something when his salary depends on him not understanding it. I think a lot of people get paid a lot of money to lie about climate change. Even the Defense Department puts it up there as one of the grave risks to national security, man-made climate change. So thank you for talking about this. It's important.
Thank you.
A lot of people don't want to talk about it, though, because business, of course, often collides with the environment, and money talks.
The biggest business can be taking care of your environment, and renewals have surpassed the predictions on how many jobs they're creating globally. So taking care of our environment could create a whole new types of businesses that we're not even aware of yet.
But you know, even just the mention of the name, climate change or global warming, sets people off.
I know, it's very unfortunate. I hope, and I think we will, I believe we will get to a place where we understand what's happening and we just want to talk about the solutions. Let's debate the policies. Let's believe in the science. Let's trust the science and get to taking care of our Earth and building a better place for all of our children and grandchildren.
877-217-5757. I think we have a few more folks who want to talk with Camille Manning Broom, so we will keep her for a few more minutes. And if you would like to talk with the CEO of the Center for Planning Excellence, she's at your service for a few more moments about climate change or any other topic. Now the news with Karen Henderson on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. J.C. Kane producing, and your number is 877-217-5757. A few more minutes with Camille Manning Broom. She is the CEO of the Center for Planning Excellence, and CPEX is going full-fledged into trying to find ways to combat climate change and to affect life in Louisiana, which is one of the places most directly affected by changes in the environment. Ann on Bluebonnet. Ann, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana. Good morning, Ann. All right, JC, let's see if, let's try Tony in Lafayette. Tony in Lafayette, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana. Hi, Tony.
Hey, good morning. Camille, to speak to the ongoing skeptics with the climate change, and I'm one of them, the folks that I worked with since the 90s, generally at PhD level that had some work with this, generally state that climate change is drummed up by folks with an agenda, and that the monies and the funding for studies to dispute climate change are not given out because of that agenda. The folks are typically pro-climate change. So guys like me who work with these gentlemen and ladies, former NASA astronauts, et cetera, how can you speak to that? What can you say to help sway those that are skeptical like me?
You know, it's really hard. I would say at the core, don't we all care about our environment and human beings? And at the core, don't we see that changes are happening and we want to, we need to make things better for future generations? And the bottom line is 97% of scientists agree on human-induced climate change, and that's come out from the leading scientist globally. The IPCC report is irrefutable. CO2 emissions have increased in the last 800,000 years. That's really started since the last Industrial Revolution. In this century, since 2000, we've experienced 17 of the 18 hottest years on record. So regardless if climate change impacts are cyclical, which they have been, there's a number of very complicated factors. We are emitting too many greenhouse gases into the atmosphere, which is heating the Earth. And we're dealing with it.
Dan downtown. Dan, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Yeah, Ms. Broom, is there a concern that regardless of the efforts at the local and state level to deal with global warming, the 5-4 majority of right-wingers on the Supreme Court will look out for the polluters of corporate America?
You know, I at the end of the day, I really do believe that the market's going to take care of a lot of this. The banks are getting involved. The Central Bank of Europe won't even allow, or they're not putting money out for investments unless there's a climate change lens. The big Moody's and insurance industries are now putting climate change risk into their modeling. There's going to be a lot that happens within the market in the next 10 years. I think, you know, here in Louisiana, oil and gas is a big fabric and a big part of our community. While we're having continual disasters and impacts from climate change, we also don't want to have an economic disaster. And so we are going to have to figure out how to partner and work with our industries and also adapt as the market changes. And so, you know, a lot of people work at oil and gas or, you know, higher polluting industries in Louisiana, and they're important to the fabric of the state. We just need to, you know, diversify. But also, you know, we are on the front lines, and we're going to see rapid changes, and the poor, the low income, will get hit the worst.
All right. Well, thank you, Camille Manning-Broom. Appreciate your time today, and appreciate what you do. We'll hopefully
thank you so much for having me.
Occasion
thanks
to talk.
Okay.
Now, today, of course, is another day in the now life and death of Jeffrey Epstein, who in the last few months has become one of the most famous Americans of the last decade or so, and famous for all the wrong reasons. Infamous is a better term. And this is a man who associated with presidents and plutocrats. And President Trump, as the New York Times notes today, has long used his fame and platform to amplify conspiracy theories and undermine political enemies by muddying the waters when it comes to facts. In fact, that is a direct line from the story from Maggie Haberman and Annie Carney from the New York Times today. For years, the president has helped to erode voter faith in institutions by invoking the idea of a sinister force such as the deep state or a rigged electoral system that is thwarting the will of the people in an attempt to undermine him. But a macabre subgenre of Mr. Trump's fondness for conspiracy theories has been to accuse directly or indirectly his political enemies of murder. In the heat of the 2016 Republican primary, Mr. Trump elevated an unsubstantiated rumor published by the Trump-friendly National Enquirer insinuating that the father of one of his rivals, Senator Ted Cruz of Texas, was involved in the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. Earlier that year, Donald Trump fed into the idea that Antonin Scalia, a Supreme Court justice who died in his sleep in 2016, could have been murdered in his bed. On Saturday, 2.5 years into his presidency, and hours after Jeffrey Epstein, the financier accused of sex trafficking, was found dead in a federal jail cell in Manhattan, Mr. Trump once again weighed in by elevating an online conspiracy theory that the Clintons were linked to his death. Mr. Epstein had information on Bill Clinton, and now he's dead. Terrence Williams, a comedian and Trump supporter, wrote on Twitter Saturday. Mr. Williams also noted that for some odd reason, people that have information on the Clintons end up dead. Mr. Trump promptly shared the baseless insinuation online, retweeting it to his 63 million followers. The president, who is entering the thick of an election season, is yet to find any candidate in the crowded Democratic field whom he delights in invoking as much as his forever foils, Bill and Hillary Clinton, the one-time reigning couple of Democratic politics who have been the subject of conspiracy mongering on the right for decades. And even though the Clintons have retreated from politics, it's one of those things that continues to live on, said Douglas Brinkley, the former UNO professor. Mr. Trump's decision to weigh in on the case of Mr. Epstein and his apparent suicide, even while his own Justice Department is investigating, has also a political imperative to it, Mr. Brinkley says. The first thing Trump wanted to do was put Bill Clinton into the mix, make it about Bubba, not about the Donald. Mr. Clinton and Mr. Epstein were first linked in 2002 when it was reported that the former president took his first of 4 trips aboard Mr. Epstein's private jets for a trip related to Clinton's work on his foundation. Clinton has stressed that he has not been in touch with Epstein in over a decade, but Mr. Trump has his long history with Mr. Epstein, one he has been playing down since before he began his presidential campaign. The two New Yorkers were friends throughout the 90s into the 2000s. On at least one instance, they were caught on camera ogling women together at Mar-a-Lago, Trump's Palm Beach estate. the source of their eventual falling out, which Trump has highlighted more than the friendship itself, has been in dispute. Whether he believes the theories he promotes or not, Mr. Trump knows, writes the Times, that many people will latch on to them, lured by the idea that a hidden force is controlling fate. And Mr. Trump continues to peddle these unsubstantiated rumors. And when they involve the Clintons, he goes into overdrive. And as noted, Trump himself, the president, has a long history with Jeffrey Epstein. And I would assume that the Justice Department will continue its investigation and hopefully get to the bottom of any activities that powerful people had that would have been illegal in the company of Mr. Epstein, who was apparently not being watched as he should have been after he'd already tried to kill himself one time, and he was left 3 to 6 hours alone, and he did hang himself, and he is dead at the age of 66, and I'm sure took a lot of secrets to the grave, but he did have associations with some of the most rich and powerful people on the planet, including two United States presidents. Yesterday in New Orleans, Bill Barr, addressing a group, said he was appalled by what happened, but it happened on his watch. He was in charge of that facility where Mr. Epstein died, and after one suicide attempt, you would think that they would make sure he never tried it again, and this time he not only tried it, he did it. And Mr. Barr has some culpability in this as well, and he has a long history with Mr. Epstein. It was Barr's father who hired Epstein to teach at a private school in New York City, a very prestigious private school, even though Epstein was a college dropout, something that would be unheard of, say, at Episcopal, to hire somebody who does not have a college degree, and yet Bill Barr's father did that many years ago. So he and the Epsteins go back even farther than does Donald Trump or Bill Clinton, and it will be fascinating to see how this works out. But once again, very few, if any, Republican elected officials, certainly none from Louisiana, will criticize the president for peddling these rumors, which do nothing but cause division. And I saw on Facebook the columnist for The Advocate, Dan Fagan, the newspaper of record, was posting material indicating the Clintons' association with Epstein as though that had something to do with Mr. Epstein's death. And it's quite doubtful that it had anything to do with Mr. Epstein's death, but those who hate the Clintons will continue to attack them, and they, for whatever reason, did not delight enough in President Trump's victory over Hillary Clinton to stop doing it. And she did win the popular vote by almost 3 million votes, but she is gone and gone forever, and so is her husband. But Donald Trump remains the president. Let's see what happens with the investigation. We'll be talking about it in the days to come. We're back after this brief timeout with more Talk Louisiana.